Today we'll take a look at another koan, case number 26 in the Wu Men Guan. Two monks roll up the bamboo blind. The case reads, the great Fa Yen of Qingliang took the high seat before the midday meal to preach to his assembly. Raising his hands, he pointed to the bamboo blinds. Two monks went and rolled them up in the same manner. Fa Yen said, one gains, one loses. Wu Men's commentary. Tell me, which one gained? Which one lost? If you have the single eye regarding this, you will see where the national teacher Qingliang failed. But I must warn you strictly against arguing gain and loss. And Wu Men's verse. When they are rolled up, the great sky is bright and clear. But the great sky still does not match our way. Why don't you throw away that sky completely? Then, not a breath of wind will come through. We have already met Master Fa Yen, who came to awakening with the help of Dai Zang in case number 20 in the Shoyoroku, in which Dai Zang asked Fa Yen, where are you going? Fa Yen said, around on pilgrimage. Dai Zang said, what is the purpose of pilgrimage? Fa Yen said, I don't know. Dai Zang said, not knowing is most intimate. Fa Yen was suddenly enlightened. In the present case, Fa Yen is now an eminent Zen master. After attaining the way with Dai Zang, he went north to one of the independent kingdoms of the five dynasties that arose after the collapse of the Tang and taught in various monasteries, mostly at Qingliang. The great Fa Yen of Qingliang took the high seat before the midday meal to preach to his assembly. Raising his hand, he pointed to the bamboo blinds. Two monks went and rolled them up in the same manner. Raising his hand, he points to the bamboo blinds. He doesn't say anything. He just points. And two of his monks hop to it. Why? The master points. We look and decide. Oh, that's what he wants. But how do we know that? Do we know that? He points. If I pointed something right now, what would happen? Well, that didn't work. Or did it? Can you say why I pointed? Can I say why I pointed? Oh, we can say anything we want, but what is it really about? Back in another lifetime, I was in competitive fencing for many years. Once in a while, in a tournament, I would do some crazy move against my opponent. And if it worked, and I got the touch on him, somebody might ask me later, "Why did you do that?" If I were honest, I would say, "Darned if I know." But usually I would come up with some after-the-fact rationale that may or may not have had anything to do with it. How much of what we think of as rational, intended activity is just stuff that happens, and all our visions and revisions are only rationalizations after the fact? Why did Fa Yin point? And why did the monks get up? Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Once the Buddha held up a flower before the multitudes, and only Mahakashyapa smiled. Thereupon the Buddha conferred the robe and bowl of Dharma transmission upon Mahakashyapa. And Wu Men asks, if all the monks had smiled, how would the Dharma have been transmitted? Or if Mahakashyapa had not smiled, what then? Well, to paraphrase Wu Men, suppose that when Fa Yin pointed, none of the monks had gotten up. What then? Suppose that when he pointed, all the monks had gotten up. Kind of embarrassing, no? Why did only Mahakashyapa smile? Why did only those two monks get up? Were those two just shrewd enough to understand the teacher's mind and the others were not? Or did they understand something else? Did they have a reason? Don't get caught up in simplistic notions of cause and effect, right and wrong, or thinking that these guys were smarter or more enlightened than any of the others. The monks who remain sitting are whole and complete. The monks who got up are whole and complete. Fa Yin points, two monks get up. The Buddha holds up a flower. Mahakashyapa smiles. Mahakashyapa calls Ananda, and Ananda answers, "Yes, sir." The bell rings. We all get up to do kinhin. Another bell rings, and we go to Orioki. These are the miracles. They are the great miracles. In Buddhism, miracles are not about levitation or bringing forth a pillar of fire or any of that stuff. Those are small miracles, inconsequential, dependent on time, place, and ability. The great miracles are just this. Walking, sitting, eating. Dogen writes about these. The miracles I am speaking of are the daily activities of Buddhas, which they do not neglect to practice. Layman Pong said, miracles are nothing other than fetching water and carrying firewood. It is in practice that our everyday activities are seen to be miracles. But even without practice and realization, they are still miracles. Dogen continues, although miracles are noticed once in a while, miracles are miracles. It is not that things are eliminated or perish when they are unnoticed. Things are just as they are even when unnoticed. Even when people do not know that fetching water is a miracle, the fact that fetching water is a miracle is undeniable. Or pointing to the window. Or rolling up the blinds. For some reason, we don't like miracles. We do our best to destroy them, even as they arise, with after-the-fact rationalizations. It gives the illusory self the illusion of control, of knowing. It is not that the great reality has any obligation to notice us or pay any attention to us, our small ego selves. It is the work of the ego self to pay attention to the great reality and eventually to realize that we are none other than the great reality. This is reiterated in the Zen Buddhist approach to the sutras. We sometimes think of the sutras as words written on paper. Well, yes, in a way they are. But in case number 3 in the Shoyoroku, a king of eastern India invited the 27th patriarch, Prajnatara, for Buddhist food. The king asked, "Why don't you recite sutras?" Prajnatara said, "I am always reciting millions and millions of scrolls of sutras." Millions and millions of scrolls of sutras every moment. Master Ru Jing, Dogen's teacher, with whom we have spent some time with in the mornings, says, "Sacred silence and sacred expounding are both Buddha activities. The light of consciousness is the Buddha activity. Having a meal is the Buddha activity. Being born in heaven, coming down from heaven, becoming a monk, practicing asceticism, encountering demons, attaining the way, practicing begging, and entering nirvana are all Buddhist activities. Sentient beings who see and hear this all attain benefit. Therefore, you should be clear that all these things are sutras with complete meaning. To expound Dharma through Buddha activities is called expounding a sutra of complete meaning. These sutras are the Dharma of Buddha ancestors." Or pointing to the window. Or rolling up the blinds. Or doing kinhin. Or sitting and listening. I'm going to digress here a little bit now, take a little side trip. In looking at this Taisho yesterday, an incident occurred to me quite a few years ago. I was at Sesshin at Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe. One night, I had been doing yaza, the late night sitting. I went into the dining room where the tea table was set up, and I took some tea and sat down on the floor in a corner. I sat there, looking at the cup in my hand, and suddenly my hand put the cup to my lips. I had had no idea that that was going to happen. I certainly didn't think, I'm going to put this cup to my lips and drink. It just happened. For the next hour or so, I sat there and I tried to see some sort of intent or purpose that would precede the action. There wasn't any. In fact, what I saw clearly for the first time was that the intent followed the movement. But this happened so quickly that we can very easily be fooled. We naturally assume that our actions are determined by our intentions, when it is actually just the opposite. This turns our usual personal notion of cause and effect on its head. But we can see this only in deep stillness. We don't pretend that the rain that falls or the noise of the passing traffic arise out of our intent. Why then do we take this arbitrarily created entity that we call the separate self and assume that its actions arise out of some kind of intent? We get this implied by statements that we come across all the time in Zen literature. Things like, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I rest. Nowhere does anybody say that when I feel tired, I decide that I'm tired, so I decide to rest, and then I rest. It would make just as much sense to say that the rain decides to fall, and then it falls, and the earth decides to get wet, and so it gets wet. When I'm tired, I rest. Period. In the depths of our practice, can anyone seriously believe that the deeply mindful actions that Ru Jing calls the complete Dharma of Buddha ancestors could originate from the constrained and limited judgments, opinions, and delusions of the discursive mind? Nowhere is this expressed more succinctly than in a poem by Wendell Berry. He writes, "Willing to die, you give up your will. Be still until that which moves all else moves you." Yes. Be still until you see clearly that you do not move. You are moved. This is not to say that everyone should go out to the foyer during yaza tonight and stare at their teacups. On the other hand, it might be worth a try. So back to the koan. Two monks went and rolled the blinds up in the same manner. Fa Yen said, "One gains, one loses." The monks rolled up the blinds in the same manner. Now, in the same manner is an important point that the koan has to establish. Yamada Roshi insists that they did it in exactly the same way. Is that really possible? Are they twins? Have they been rehearsing this act? We're all the same, yet not the same. Yin Wu, the editor and commentator of the Hekigan Roku, never tires of saying, they were born the same, but they do not die the same. Yes, each of us comes forth from that vast, boundless, open one that we sometimes call emptiness. Yet each of us comes forth in a completely different way. When we sit in Zazen, back straight, chin tucked, hands in the mudra, all as Dogen describes, how are we any different from Shakyamuni Buddha? The Buddha sits, breathes, eats, sleeps. We sit in the same manner. We breathe, we eat, we sleep. Yet each one of us is our own person. One gains, one loses. What is Fa Yin doing here? Is he testing the monks? That would be a legitimate function of a teacher, to throw out a remark, give a shout or a blow, and see how somebody reacts. Kapla Roshi used to advise, not seriously, I don't think, that if you want to see someone, if someone is really enlightened, insult them. What? An idiot like you, enlightened? See how they react. In case number 11 in the Wu Men Guan, Chao Cho went to a hermit's hut and asked, are you in? Are you in? The hermit lifted up his fist. Chao Cho said, the water is too shallow for a ship to anchor. And he left. Again, he went to a hermit's hut and asked, are you in? Are you in? This hermit, too, lifted up his fist. Chao Cho said, freely you give, freely you take away. Freely you bestow life, freely you destroy. And he made a profound bow. And Wu Men asks, why does he accept one and reject the other? Is Chao Cho testing these two monks the same way that Fa Yin is testing his students? But Chao Cho's two hermits are mature practitioners, deeply realized. Can we say the same for Fa Yin's monks? One gains, one loses. Gains what? Loses what? What is this gain and loss? It's life. It's change. It's our true nature. We get a paycheck. We gain money. We go shopping. We lose money. But we gain food. I breathe in and out. Is that gain or loss? I gain oxygen and lose carbon dioxide. Well, I'd better. It keeps me alive. A woman gives birth to a child. Has she lost something or gained something? As I get older, I gain weight and lose hair. So what? In this relative world, gain and loss is the rule. So is this Fa Yin's point, that we are all different, that things change? Well, I think we knew that already. Wu Men's commentary. Tell me which one gained, which one lost. If you have the single eye regarding this, you will see where the national teacher, Qing Yang, failed. But I must warn you strictly against arguing gain and loss. The national teacher failed. How so? Did he fail to get a rise out of either of the monks? As soon as we get into words, concepts, notions about anything, we have failed. We have failed to truly convey the unconveyable. We have not expressed the inexpressible. It's impossible. Yet, teachers, Zen masters, are always getting down into the weeds and playing with mud balls, as Yen Wu likes to put it. They have no choice. It is the vow of the Bodhisattva. How is it that Fa Yen did not fail? Fa Yen says, one gains, one loses. Another miracle. We must realize the saying, one gains, one loses, is not about gain and loss. Sung Tsang, in the verses on the faith mind, says, gain and loss and right and wrong, once and for all, get rid of them. That could be getting rid of our lives, but certainly don't attach to them. Bodhidharma says, the self nature is inconceivably wondrous. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, not having thoughts of gaining is called the precept of not stealing. Do not try to quantify enlightenment or attach to notion of levels of enlightenment. They are all worth exactly zero. The monk who gains is whole and complete. The monk who loses is whole and complete. Are they the same or are they different? If you say they are the same, I give you 30 blows. If you say they are different, I give you 30 blows. If you say they are both the same and different, I give you 60 blows. If you say they are neither the same nor different, I give you 60 blows. Do not practice to gain enlightenment, or insight, or kensho, or the answer to a koan, or anything else. Do not practice to lose anything, delusions, or thoughts, or ignorance. We sit. There is no because, so don't worry about it. We just sit, period. That's the miracle. Eventually, we let go of the why. This is not to say that the why might not exist, just that it is unknowable. And when we approach that unknowable, when we approach it through not knowing, that is where we find the deepest knowing of all. Together with all beings, we realize Buddhahood.